Welcome to the Activation Podcast, brought to you by the Conscious Resistance Network. I'm your host, Derek Brose. In every episode of this podcast, we're going to explore solutions in the areas of health, permaculture, growing your own food, technology. We'll be interviewing guests who are providing important solutions that are more important than ever in this time we are living in. The Activation Podcast is focused on bringing you cutting-edge solutions to empower humanity. Hey everyone, this is Derek Brose back with another episode of the Activation Podcast. It's been a couple of months now since I've broadcasted an episode, and I'm excited for this one because it's been in the process for at least a couple of months, finally getting to talk on camera with a friend, Sire G, who we've been connecting now over the internet for the last couple of years, and really, I think, more intensively the last few months here. So it's great to catch up with you, man, and this is going to be a little different than what I normally do, where it's just me kind of picking a guest brain, because I think we both have questions for each other and things we'd like to share. So yeah, how are you doing today, man? And thanks for joining me.
Doing great. It was really amazing to meet you in person as well, just a few months ago in Mexico. It was a highlight of the Anarchapoco event was actually meeting you and your partner. So since then I've been looking forward to this conversation, and I wanted to introduce my audience to you and your work. So it's a perfect cross-pollination.
Absolutely, man. Whenever we have people who are doing really powerful work like you are, and you know, myself doing my work, and we're working in similar arenas and then also in some different ways and then overlapping, it's always great when we finally come together. I'm sure there'll be people in both of our audiences who are excited to see us together. So let's just start before, I know we're going to go pretty deep tonight in like different ways. We're going to focus, of course, on solutions is what I really try to focus on with this specific podcast. But before we get into any of the deeper material, maybe you can give my audience a little bit of background about how you got into Green Med Info and just in general, your path that you're on.
Yeah, I think in a nutshell, you know, Green Med Info is a, you know, resource for natural health, you know, focusing on giving people the so-called evidence, you know, the scientific research that they need to feel that there's like validation for what many of us might already know intuitively, like food can heal your body, right? For example, or chemicals, patented chemicals such as drugs are probably things to avoid if you want to stay healthy outside of emergency care. So those sorts of things, you know, for me was really a life and death necessity, because I was born a very sick infant and went through the normal medical procedures that, you know, are considered standard in terms of the care offered. But, you know, things from circumcision to vaccination, I think, caused quite a lot of mayhem in my body. And, you know, after many years of the medical merry-go-round, many surgeries, a lot of near-death experiences, quite frankly, in the medical system, I came to natural medicine because it was a lifeline. It helped me to heal and eventually get off of the you know, sort of this medical merry-go-round. So technically, you know, for me, it was just something that I had to do. And so in that process, I discovered this wealth of information through the National Library of Medicine, which anyone can still search on PubMed.gov. It's like 30 million plus citations, right? And spent many years just diving in and finding all this amazing research, validating things as H and as turmeric for healing and, you know, the dangers of vaccination, for example. Many, many years ago, I was like, I cannot believe how little research there is to show the vaccines in today's schedule, for example, are safe and effective. So, you know, that's sort of also what kicked the beehive a bit and got me in a bit of trouble, you know, being targeted as a source of, quote, misinformation all the way back in 2012 through some UNICEF document. So I kind of saw what was coming. You know, and so my activism was, you know, a byproduct of a number of things. But, you know, I think like you, I've focused a lot recently on solutions and also making sure that, you know, I'm not becoming a monster and fighting the monster. You know, that Nietzsche quote about, you know, be careful looking into the abyss, it looks into you, and be careful fighting monsters because you could become one. So that's part of the challenge of today and the opportunity to try to stay in integrity and, you know, try to change the world by creating this new system, you know, that you and I are, you know, helping others to realize in their daily actions. They can start a garden, they can, you know, go ahead and take care of certain medical needs themselves. And this is really the future that I'm most excited about. And that's also why I'm super excited to introduce my base agreement info to your work and your community.
You know, I find it interesting you sharing about, like you said, the medical merry-go-round, because I definitely had similar experiences as a young kid. I mean, I had 3-4 ear surgeries by the time I was 10 years old, spent a couple of weeks in the hospital with pneumonia, bronchitis, all kinds of stuff. My parents weren't really just, you know, people who I'd say just blindly trust authority. But in the case, when it comes to the doctor, I definitely think when I was younger, maybe less so now, my mother was like, if the doctor said, hey, your son can't hear well, we need to put tubes in his ear, we need to do this invasive surgery, they just sort of went along with it. And there were periods of time where I definitely spent, you know, I was taking 5 to 10 different pills a day for whatever things they were telling my parents I need. You know, I remember getting all the allergy tests, the pricks and all this stuff. And then for a couple of years of my life, I was going up to the hospital just to get a cocktail of some shot that they told my parents I needed to help my allergies. And just so many things like that, that I didn't really ever think too much about and how that might have affected my health. And it's interesting how some of us in this arena, you know, maybe have, whether it starts with health issues or just some sort of life thing, you know, some sort of life paradigm shift, that it can cause you to start looking deeper. You know, because health, despite my work not really focusing so much specifically on health, things like fluoride, vaccines, EMFs were some of the first topics I came across years ago. And that helped me look back and like, wow, why were my parents just trusting the doctors when they were saying, hey, your son needs this cocktail or you need to take this drug or whatever, right? So it's interesting, those similarities. And yeah, I also look forward to, in this conversation, sharing more with my audience about what you're doing with Be Sovereign and the other ways that you are, you know, extremely focused on solutions like myself. So really good to get some background on that. And of course, like, we don't even really have to spend much time, but you sort of touched on it. The attempts to label you and others disinformation, the disinformation dozen. Clearly, you know, you've been on the pulse and above the target for a while now. And you also have the state of mind to kind of recognize that the answer is not to fight the machine by becoming the machine, or, as you said, you know, fight the monsters by becoming them. Cause that, I think, is a danger that many of us can slip into within our communities and just the way that we approach our activism, we approach our life path in general. And so I very much respect and appreciate the way that you have provided people with such helpful information, and then also had the state of mind to, you know, see that you are being targeted and attacked and not kind of respond in kind.
Well, we can only do the best that we can do, that's for sure. It's not like I've a perfect track record, you know, but what I've tried to do is to provide information from the very sources of authority that we, you know, often just reflexively trust. So if it's an FDA document before the release of the vaccines saying that they're looking for 23 different signals of harm from the vaccine, including death, and I report on it, and then, you know, they roll out the vaccine, what basically happens is that then they go ahead and try to attack the messenger, even though their own documents show that they were aware that this was going to be a very risky intervention. So I've been doing that for years, you know, just reporting from peer-reviewed published research or government databases. And it's unfortunately become more and more difficult to just refer to facts and or basic human rights, such as, you know, the right to informed consent. You know, if there's going to be a risk associated with a medical intervention, you should probably have a choice and at least should be informed as to what the actual benefits are and or downsides. And that's being deprived. You know, basically humanity is undergoing a crisis where there's a, I believe, biopolitical meta state that is being formed, right? It's sort of like a supranational governmental structure under the false auspices of saving the world from, you know, pandemics and, you know, this sort of biosecurity, you know, global system. Like right now, the World Health Organization is trying to draft an international pandemic treaty, which would basically preempt sovereign states' rights to opt out of certain interventions or data sharing or mandates the next time a variant is declared. So we're seeing that unfold before our eyes. And, you know, that's also why I have a nonprofit called Stand for Health Freedom. I co-founded, which we have a campaign right now to raise awareness about that unfortunate process that is getting almost no reporting in the mainstream media globally. And yet being subject for the past 2 years to this campaign labeling me along with 11 others as the primary threat, really, in terms of misinformation causing people to die, it's really quite remarkable to see that. You know, they can put 84,000 articles out on myself and others, making it appear as if 12 people, not hundreds of millions of people, are resisting these really egregious mandates. And yet when it comes to creating a new global public health world order, which is literally the way they describe it, there's actually just crickets. So again, that's why, you know, platforms like yours, platforms like mine, which are truly independent, are so needed in this day and age. Because if we've witnessed anything, it was that in the past 2 years, they were able to, transfer more wealth and power in human history under the radar, simply because they centralized and weaponized the global media. You know, the dissenting voices were basically vilified. And right now they're talking about criminalizing any questioning of these official narratives. I mean, we saw the widespread censorship done by YouTube and Facebook and Instagram referencing the World Health Organization, the Ministry of Truth, right, as their ultimate reason why they can just, remove you from the internet. So it's really quite remarkable to observe what's happening. So this better than anyone because you've written extensively about it.
Well, I just want to say I appreciate as well, like in addition to what you've done with GreenMed Info, with having the repository of data and just, like you said, studies for people to go in and different topics and make their own conclusions and do their research. But you also do take a journalistic, you know, edge with it. And with the story you just mentioned, I mean, other than myself doing a short clip, this is back in December when I first heard about the pandemic treaty. And the clip I did, it was on my radio show, Freethinker Radio. It was just a couple of minutes because I noticed it and was just kind of briefly going over the story. But I even commented at the time, I don't think anybody in alternative media has picked up on this yet. And you are the only other person I've seen who's done like a reasonable investigation into what the pandemic treaty is about. And as you said, it's attempts to erase individual and national sovereignty and essentially just enforce whatever they want for the next pandemic, as Bill Gates calls it. So I really appreciate that as well, that you've got the deep data and the repository of knowledge for people who are looking for that. But then there's also the journalistic side of your work as well. So thanks for that. And let's talk for a moment about what you said, Stand for Health Freedom. Tell us more about what's the goal of that.
Yeah, so it's a 501c4 that was founded in 2019 as an attempt to leverage technology that was already being utilized by massive lobby organizations, IRA, also the Fortune 500 companies, in order to give citizens the same tools to connect directly with their elected officials. We saw in 11 cases over the past 2 years where we were able to help individuals like you and I send messages directly to these elected officials, which resulted in withdrawal of certain legislation that would have deprived us of basic health freedom. So that was really remarkable to see. And so right now we're just really gathering up the grassroots momentum here for, you know, helping people to elect those who do believe in basic health freedoms, you know, basic human rights. It's pretty simple. Parental rights, for example, children should not be able to make a decision as to whether they get vaccines, you know, ages like 11 and 12. That's what's being legislated throughout the country right now. They're trying to basically take parents out of the equation. And you should be able to have access to, again, informed consent when it comes to medical decisions. And these are very basic advocacies. So we're not an anti-vaccine organization. We're pro-choice, you know, pro-informed consent, pro-parental rights. And yet, as you know, those simple advocacies are being labeled as anti-vaccine, right? So that's one of the projects that I think people will find very empowering. StandForHealthFreedom.com.
That's awesome. Yeah, I definitely, you know, I've seen you guys sending out the emails trying to get people to do these kind of mass actions. And I think that those sorts of things can be valuable, as you said, can send a message to the powers that wish they were to, you know, back off. And sometimes that's all we can do, right, is try to keep things from progressing down the line towards where we know they would like to go. But besides, you know, doing those sorts of actions, and besides like writing articles and gathering data and reports, what other tools, you know, do you feel like you use in your individual life? Maybe just kind of more on the personal side of things, on your own personal path. Like, what kind of tools, you know, are you into, spiritual tools, et cetera, that just help you stay focused and kind of centered amongst all this craziness?
Yeah, well, that's a great question, because what I've discovered in the past 2 years is that by focusing on self-care, by focusing on, you know, the kind of work that we all, I think, probably need to do around trauma, personal trauma, intergenerational trauma, species-wide trauma, by clearing that, by going through it, by working it, working to confront your fears, you become a better person. You start to vibrate at a different frequency, and you start to attract to you others who share your values, and you start to feel, in a way, safer and held in the world, because you realize that, you know, there is this, you know, growing community of people that want to bring in this new world, right? And so that's been really exciting to me. I mean, I'm in Miami, and I'm so fortunate to have so many beautiful people in my life that I just feel like we are living in a rather divine moment here. I mean, even during the, you know, scamdemic, plandemic, whatever phrase you want to use, we were out there, you know, doing ecstatic dance. We were drumming. We were connecting when everyone was saying that this was like the most reckless behavior you could do, right? And in our community, virtually no one I know was participating in, you know, the kind of, I mean, a lot of it, I think, was nocebo-related illness. But in terms of our community, I felt like we were all resilient, strong. Someone had a fever, a cold, they got through it. It's like, however, it's been that way since the beginning of time. But people didn't freak out, run to the hospital, and end up on a ventilator, right? I mean, it's just that to me is what it's really about, is just trying to, every day, live the best version of yourself and be human, be kind, first and foremost to yourself, and then that just overflows to others. And that's been a real lesson for me, because, you know, in this day and age, it's easy to, you know, get paranoid, or, I mean, look, I was targeted from the lips of the president as being a killer. And there were times where I was like, I can't believe this is happening. Should I be afraid for my safety? You know, are they going to come get me? But what I did is I continued to focus on just the things I could do to support my health and well-being, and, you know, look within. And I think that that's really what's, a lot of folks are really realizing that that's what life is about. You know, it's a spiritual experience. What you have come at you from outside is often a lesson, right? You know, that you've co-created, and to take that kind of radical responsibility, even when it's easy to be a victim, you know, you're literally being targeted. That's what up-levels you, you know? And so anyway, that's been my own personal journey in the past 2 years.
So do you feel like there are certain things besides, obviously, community? That's I think was what I'll take away from that answer. That's key, like, especially the last 2 years. I mean, so many people have told us that prior to getting involved with the Greater Reset or the Freedom Cell Network, or maybe your community, or just different, you know, different actions that led them to meeting other people and realizing, oh my God, I'm not alone. That prior to that, people were depressed. People were sometimes considering maybe even suicide and things of that sort. Those things that we've seen spike, right? And community is so key to that, helping people realize they're not alone. And within your community, are there certain things that, you know, are you, like, I know you guys have different types of gatherings. Like, what is it that, besides the company of other people, that you feel helps you, you know, just stay centered? And you also mentioned, you know, dealing with trauma and things of that sort. Do you have any specific, you know, things you would say about that? Like, is it meditating with the group together, or, you know, going to ecstatic dances, or, you know, what are the kind of things that lead you to feeling like you have the opportunity to work through your trauma, to work on your healing?
Well, there's just so much available these days, like in terms of modalities, you know, that you can access, you know, things like breath work, for example. There's plant medicine, you know, done in the right setting with the right facilitators. It can be like it could be like 1,000 hours of therapy, you know. So we have these technologies available to us today that are so helpful for clearing so much of what lives, you know, beneath the surface of consciousness. So, you know, I think that it can be any number of things, but, you know, I think right now, you know, healing is so much more than just, you know, having this perfect physiological state. I think that we're coming to discover that, you know, our souls, right? That's the center of health, right? Real health is, how do we feel? Is there a sense of ease deep within our body? And again, are we connected to those, you know, around us, our family, our friends? And that could be anyone. I mean, we're all human, basically. So rediscovering that commonality is such a beautiful thing. And it can be done anywhere with anyone. You know, we're all human fundamentally. It's just that we carry so much fear with us, and we, you know, people live up and down to our expectations. And so I think that, you know, that's the key for me, at least. But as far as, you know, getting concrete, you know, we have this beautiful school in Miami, Centner Academy, and they're the school that stood up against this agenda. The only school I know of that said, listen, we do not feel it's safe for our staff to get vaccinated, given concerns around things like transmission, right? And so they got just hammered internationally for that decision. But this school is happiness centered. You know, they have little wellness stations in each classroom with like singing bowls and essential oils. They have a organic farm, which actually permaculture based agriculture in South Miami, 30 something acres, where they're doing farm to table. So it's like, you know, there's little things like this happening everywhere where people are really vertically integrating with full integrity, you know, the intention to get off the old system and create the new structures. And so there's a lot of that going on too, you know, so it's not just sort of in the ethers, but there's some concrete things that are happening in places like Miami that I'm really excited about.
Yeah, why don't we talk a little bit more about one of those concrete things? Because, you know, for those who know my work, the conscious resistance I've focused on for the last decade, bringing together both the spiritual, the inner healing journey, you know, based on my own experiences, having to work through my trauma, you know, the things I went through, and recognizing, wow, you know, this is absolutely vital, important. And also at the same time, as an activist and as a journalist, paying attention to the physical realm, to the concrete stuff, the things that, you know, are affecting us in that area, and bringing the two together. And one of the projects that you were working on, I know, as far as creating new systems and focusing on what we're, you know, what's the next stage, is the Be Sovereign website. You know, and I hate to even just call it a website, because I feel like your vision, from what you've explained to me, is so much more. It's so much bigger. It encompasses so many different layers. So maybe you could talk a little bit about that for a moment.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. And, you know, I would love for you also to share more about your story, Derek, because of just the incredible things you've created, and also more about what you created. So I'll start, I guess, by just summarizing, like, Be Sovereign was a byproduct of my tribe, if you will, being deplatformed with me. So in other words, you know, we had like 2 million followers throughout the social media, you know, outlets that were available, that were removed due to this agenda to label me and a few others as being a source of information that was harming people. And, you know, we had hundreds of thousands of people, you know, out there, brands, etc., that were speaking out that also got deplatformed. So in order to not complain and feel like a victim, right, we said, all right, we're going to try to manifest a tech stack that doesn't have the big brother characteristics, right, but still has a lot of the functionality. And just through serendipity, or I don't know, divine intervention, I met this man who's actually my best friend now, who built a platform over the past 5 years that enables you to do a lot of the things we're used to, you know, through YouTube and Instagram, Facebook, Patreon, Zoom. So this unicorn of a tech stack is what we're rolling out under the brand Be Sovereign. And it's live now. We have brands on there. We have our own membership there. And it's enabling, you know, people to connect with their tribes directly. They can determine, you know, how they want to monetize their content if they want to do that. Because believe it or not, for people out there who don't know this, if you watch a video on YouTube, we try to reproduce this, where say there's 100,000 views front to back, that's $5,000 of usage fees for one video. And until doing this project, I had no clue. But it gives you a sense of the shadow of big tech, because they're making massive amounts of profit, because they're basically taking your data surreptitiously, and they're reselling it, and there's even more than profit motive there. There's a lot of nefarious stuff going on as well in terms of digital twinning and dossiers being produced, and they're shared with, if you will, the permanent state and these alphabet agencies. So, you know, that's been going on for quite some time, you know, surveillance capitalism, et cetera. So now that we're doing it ourselves, we're inviting others to come on board and let's create this together. So it is a SaaS platform where there is a usage fee and there is a monthly fee, but we've kept it, I feel, very reasonable, given that, you know, this is quite an effort that needs to be made together. And so anyway, this is the platform that we've created, and you can check it out at besovereign.com. And I think it's going to be at least a digital arc, if you will, moving forward. I mean, we have our own servers. We're disintermediated from Amazon Web Services and other, you know, big tech platforms that do harvest our data and also can shut us down. So, you know, we're preparing for the future, because as you can see out there, I was just reading a document from the Rockefeller Foundation this morning, 136 pages, and it's all about their roadmap for the next new normal. And it's pretty scary what they're trying to architect here, which is permanent testing using saliva, for example, and where it's a test to treat. So they test you in home and then they treat you. So, you know, that means, of course, you monoclonal antibodies and vaccines. And they're just trying to descend upon people this new biopolitical reality, which is like a prison of some kind, where there's constant medical surveillance, constant, quote, intervention. And yeah, I mean, they're going, and they reference misinformation continually throughout this document. They're trying to use this new Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Agency, CISA, to basically shut down the, quote, misinformation that you and I represent, Derek, and all those people out there who are similarly sharing information that counters the dominant narrative that a priori vaccines are safe and effective and blah, blah, blah. You know, we're preparing. We have to prepare for this. It's going to happen again. In fact, even this morning, I think Fauci was announcing, it was being reported that the next COVID's going to return, you know, the next variant's going to come in the fall. I mean, they're just setting it all up again, you know, to reconsolidate, you know, their power.
Hold that thought. Guys, before we go any further, I want to tell you a little bit about a project that I recently launched called the Holistic Self-Assessment Online Course. Now, some of you know that I released this book, The Holistic Self-Assessment, in April 2018. And essentially, this book is the culmination of the experiences I had when I went to prison, dealing with addiction, dealing with depression, and suicide attempts. This is the process that I took myself through to get to know who I am, to get to know my principles, to get to align my relationships, my words, my thoughts, and actions with those principles. Overall, it's meant to be a self-empowerment, self-help guide that can help you start accomplishing your goals by aligning your principles with your actions. The book is available to download for free, and I'll include that link below. But if you're interested, I did recently launch a new online course, which you can find on the University of Reason, aka Autonomy. I partnered with them recently, and they created this whole online course for me. It's 9 weeks long. You can watch and follow along and read the book as I go through each chapter. I read it with you, and I offer some tips and some exercises. There are two different options. You can either do DIY, where you just go through the 9-week course yourself, or if you want to have personal one-on-one sessions with me, there's also an option for that. So check that out, guys. I'll include both links below. Let's get back to the podcast. Yeah, I mean, that's the bright future we have to look forward to, right? But I do think that where we started with tools like Be Sovereign and some of the things that myself and others are working on, that there are reasons to be optimistic. But I also, you know, to kind of take it back, I know you wanted to hear a little bit about some of my story in a moment. But, you know, I think that just what you shared is important to acknowledge, because so many, at least in my experience, in the so-called spiritual conscious communities, whatever label we want to put on that, are often the kind of people that put their head in the sand whenever somebody starts talking about those realities. You know, you just said like the roadmap to the new normal. Hey, they're announcing COVID is going to be coming back in the fall. I was watching Christian from Ice Age Farmer doing a report recently about the bird flu pandemic. Now they're saying like the bird flu is spreading, and that could be the next thing, right? So these are realities that exist out there that these people are working on. And I don't think it does us any good to just kind of act like they're not happening, right? And to just plug our ears or put our heads in the sand and say, that's not, you know, that's not real. I refuse to see that. And at the same time, that doesn't mean we're powerless, right? Like, I don't think anybody would assume, anybody who knows your work would assume, and I know I don't assume, that because you share some information that might be scary or overwhelming for some people, that that means that all hope is lost and there's nothing we could do, right? Because I feel like, and maybe you feel similarly, that for me, if it did feel like things were totally lost or all hope was gone, I mean, I don't know if it would even change my actions, honestly, because sometimes when I stop and think, I'm like, maybe they really have been micro-tripping all of us since birth. You know, something that's like bigger than we can even imagine, right? And if you really stop, it's like, wow, maybe things are already out of our control. Maybe we're already screwed. And even when I let my mind go to those potentials, like no matter what is going on, it feels like what we're supposed to, at least, you know, what I feel called to do is to continue to focus on what we can build for ourselves, what solutions we can come up, whether that's tech stacks, whether that's intentional communities, whether that's, you know, farms, growing our own food, thinking of new currencies, thinking of new, you know, ways to heal ourselves. All of that is important, right? I mean, even if in the face of everything that we know we're facing, it doesn't feel like to me like that now is the time to give up. Now is the time to kind of cower in fear. And in fact, it feels like it's the time to work even harder, right? Maybe it's like, okay, you see what they're doing. Well, I'm going to work just as hard. I know that's what I focus on. But to answer your question a moment ago in relation to kind of my journey, I'll share a little bit with your audience that, you know, I started to do this healing work for myself back in 2005 when I was 20 years old. I'm 37 now. I was 20 years old and, you know, a short version of the story, I got addicted to drugs and I went to prison in November 2005. And that was when I discovered meditation. You know, a couple months after I got locked up, once I got my sentence and I realized I wasn't going home for a year plus, I decided to, you know, really dig deep and to start trying to figure out what was I doing? Why was I on this path of just using all kinds of drugs and thinking that that was going to be the key to my healing or enlightenment, or at the very least, it was my form of escapism. And so when I found myself locked up at 20 years old, turning 21 behind bars, looking at the calendar and I'm not going home for at least a year, that was the beginning of me trying to say, like, you know, how did I get here? First of all, how did I get here in this position? And what was I doing, you know, putting all these drugs in my body? What did I think I was going to gain, or what did I think was going to be the answer? And yeah, that was really when a lot of the healing work, and I think my real awakening before I ever started waking up in the ways that people often refer to, like waking up to government, waking up to corporations, so-called conspiracies, you know, that didn't happen for me till 2010 after I got out of prison. But for me, 2005, getting locked up, being in a situation that felt truly powerless, you know, I don't know if people can really relate to feeling like completely powerless in a situation where, you know, you can call your wife, your husband, your boyfriend, girlfriend, lawyer, parents, whatever, and you can complain, you can cry, you can, you know, just get out all your frustration. But at the end of the day, none of them can do anything for you. You have to live that situation, right? You can't walk out whenever you want. You can't eat really whenever you want. You can't go to sleep whenever you want. These people are going to tell you where to go, when to wake up, and all these kinds of things. You know, a lot of your decision-making that we, I think people like us, really value, that personal responsibility, that radical personal responsibility, as you said, and that self-ownership is just stripped away in that sense, in a large sense, right? And in that situation of feeling totally powerless is where I do believe, like, I found my actual power, you know, and I started to, first, I started to just journal every day and just writing down my thoughts because I was just going through so much. I had also been coming off a lot of heavy drug use, so my brain was kind of in a changing state. I was getting more clear-headed the more time I was there, and I started to just journal, write my thoughts down, and really start to ask myself those questions, like, how did I get here? What were the steps that preceded this that brought me to this place now in prison? And then I also discovered meditation from the local newspaper that they send around in the prison I was in at the time. It had a religious section and it actually quoted from the Dhammapada, the Buddhist Bible as it's sometimes known. And there was just a couple of verses from the Buddha that struck me really deeply and just got me super interested. I mean, I think I'd been vaguely aware of things like Buddhism and meditation in high school, but not to any serious degree. It was pretty foreign to me. And then I started to get like family and friends, my girlfriend at the time, my grandmother to send me books on meditation and prayer. And just, I was really kind of opening up spiritually in that way. And that was it. I was just journaling my thoughts every day, started meditating in this place that's filled with a lot of fear and anger. I mean, it's all really comes back to fear, but anger is sort of the mask people put on. And there's also little things that like you don't really think about too much, I think, in our circles until you go into that. For example, I come from a Hispanic background, and there were people that thought I shouldn't be hanging out with the black guys or these other people, that I'm supposed to stick with the people that look like me or that have the same skin color. All that sort of what I would consider low level, primitive way of thinking are kind of a norm in prison. You know, it's like this group hangs out this group, this hangs out this group. There's a whole different arena of way that people act and things. And it was all very new to me. So I was navigating that while also kind of getting into my healing process. And, you know, with the meditation, with the journaling, I was able to start asking questions about why I was using drugs. And I could now, with hindsight, you know, it's been 15, 16 years since this happened, I have the hindsight, the vision where I can see, okay, well, most of my earliest memories were visiting my father in prison for his drug abuse. Then as a little kid, I started to kind of put that on my shoulders, like, man, maybe it's my fault that he's not around. Maybe, you know, he doesn't want to be around me. Maybe I did something wrong. And as a very young kid, like 7 years old, I started to do self-harm. You know, I tried to kill myself 3 times before I was 18. And I just, you know, he would come in and out of my life, and he'd promise to be there for this birthday or this activity. And he would go back to prison before I could see him. And so by the time I turned 14 years old as a teenager, and I just kind of, you know, he came in and promised to be there one more time, and that was it. I sort of swore him off and was just like, you know, screw this. I'm never going to let anybody hurt me again. I started to put this shell, this hardening around my heart, because I thought it made me safe and protected and, you know, kept me. It made me feel like I was powerful, but it really, you know, was masking a lot of the pain I was dealing with. And from 14 till pretty much the time that I started getting into drugs, like at 18, 19 years old, all the way till prison, I was just super destructive. I was a very intelligent young man. I graduated early from high school, went right into college, but everybody knew me as the kid that was throwing chairs at teachers, getting in fights, getting arrested, because I just didn't have the tools to kind of navigate all this stuff I was feeling. And then I get out of high school, start drinking. I'm the drunk guy at the party all the time. Then I start taking pills, then ecstasy. Then January 2005, I tried crystal. And by November 2005, I was locked up. And none of that was clear to me what was going on. I was just like in a state of like, oh my God, what's going on? Everything's so confusing. It's so intense. But as I got locked up and started to do that meditation, started to write down my thoughts, and I could see, oh my God, I've been just dealing with this trauma. And then even deeper, I was able to start to have some empathy and compassion for my father, because I could see like my grandparents had him when they were 14, 15 years old, and they had no parents around. They had no guidance. So they were getting into drugs in the 60s. And by the time my father was 10 years old, he was using drugs with them, selling drugs for them. My grandparents ended up recovering and kind of becoming responsible adults and moving on with their lives. But my father was never able to recover, and he lived that whole life, and he eventually died of a drug overdose 4 years ago. So, you know, and I could see that my grandfather had been abused as well. Like my great grandfather hung himself in prison. You know, I could see just all these things that I didn't know before, how there's this intergenerational trauma on both sides of my family, the Bros side of the family and in the Sanchez family. Both sides of the family have men in prison dealing with drug abuse, alcohol abuse, at least going back 3 generations. And, you know, I have my own theories and speculation on where this comes from. And some of it I think is just deep in humanity itself, you know, the kind of collective trauma. But I also think some of it relates to colonization of various bloodlines in my family and just the way people handle things, alcohol, drinking our problems away. And then that just, you know, picked up. And so it came to me, and I got locked up, and I decided, you know what, I want to end the family tradition, because the last thing I'll say, and I'd love to hear your thoughts, is like, I remember being a young kid, and because of all this stuff I just explained, because knowing my dad's going in and out of prison, I got uncles going in and out of prison, there's all this trauma and stuff. I remember my older brother and I really, really talking about the Bros family name as a disease that we wanted to end. And I remember being young kids and us promising each other we were never going to have kids so that they would end with us, that there would not be any more Bros, you know, family, anybody else to suffer the things that we'd gone through. Of course, time has changed and we have both evolved. And I'm happy to say my brother has 3 beautiful children, including the youngest Bros man that we are showering with love and, you know, making sure he has all the tools and things that he needs that we felt like we missed out on, you know. So that's, you know, going through all that stuff, it preceded any of my activism, any of my journalism. And that was very much why I eventually would create the conscious resistance and this idea of healing, as well as, you know, waking up people to the things going on in the world and the corruption, because I saw that, like, if I hadn't healed, I don't think I would be doing this fight. You know, I might be aware of it, but I was struggling so much at a certain point that, you know, if you had come to me and say, hey, Derek, did you know about the vaccine dangers? Did you know about all these different issues? I probably would have listened, because I was an open-minded person. I didn't trust authority, but I was also just trying not to kill myself that day. You know, I was going through some real everyday trauma. And so to me, my own experiences showed me the importance of healing, or, you know, working on that internal child, and how that plays a role in fixing the world itself.
Amen. Yeah. Well, that's beautiful, because, first of all, I mean, you're quite the hero in the true sense of the term to, you know, just truncate that pattern that just keeps getting passed down. You know, like, that's been a big reason for my own, you know, recent jumping into the abyss of my own self-work, because I didn't want to pass down traumas that I know I still had within me to my children. And it just happens, you know, if you're emotionally, you know, you're irritable and you have certain triggers and just there, you know, and maybe your parents had them and you see the pattern, then they just get passed down to the next generation. So that was one of my primary reasons to kind of jump into that as well. And I see that you've done an amazing thing for your bloodline. I mean, that I used to, you know, hear that Malthusian argument around, oh, like, so many people would, especially those in a sort of neoliberal mindset about, oh, you know, I don't have kids because it just adds to global warming and overpopulation. And it's like, oh my God, they don't understand, you know, they don't even have an inkling of true self-love for their own divine child. So they don't understand what life really is about and what a divine gift it is, you know, to bring in, you know, another soul. So, you know, this is really beautiful what you're saying about your story. And I think it's really clear that until one does, you know, work through that karma that's within oneself, you really can't show up for the world very effectively. You know, when you're not attached, when you don't have all this fear, you can't be triggered and captured by all these agendas that just thrive on those lower vibration emotions, you know, the dialectic of constantly causing us to feel fear, pain, scarcity. All those things were installed in us, really, almost socially engineered into us so that we can, you know, be divided and conquered, right? So ultimately, when you do that healing work, that is the real, you know, birthplace of true activism, which is, you know, sacred activism of, you know, living and being the thing itself, the thing you want the world to, you know, have more of. You're bringing it in. And that's a beautiful thing. So yeah, that we're totally in alignment there. And, you know, what I love about your work, Derek, I find real parallels with what we do, is that I have to go deep down the rabbit hole, and I do need to be aware of what is coming. You know, I've always been, you know, that's what I've always done. You know, like, I've always seen things happen. Like, when the EU published this document, was it 4 years ago, saying that the vaccine records and the passport would be merged in 2023. I was like, damn, they're telling us what they're about to do. I just didn't know how they were going to get there. And of course, you know, the pandemic button was hit. But you know what I mean? Like, if we're not aware of these things, and we're putting our heads in the sand and just focusing on Reiki and self-healing, it's like, okay, that's great. But there are literally COVID concentration camps that have been erected in China and, you know, New Zealand and Australia and probably Canada as well. And you know, when you start to look at both the super dark and the super light and trying to find a way to weave through that, you know, that's what I think this time is really asking from us. So it's sort of like the end of our childhood as well. Yeah. It's childhood's end right now. Like, it's an opportunity to be really adult, but it also means that you have to embrace your inner child and vulnerability, you know? So it's a very interesting moment we're in, but I totally see that we're in a parallel process.
Yeah, I think that what you just said there was really interesting too, as far as, well, for one, the EU document, same thing. It's like, how can, you know, they've been planning this for a couple of years. Clearly there's a reason to be paying attention. I prefer to be forward thinking than rather to be catching up, right? And like, oh no, I didn't realize this was happening. So a couple of thoughts came to mind that, how do you, for one, how do you navigate, or what's been your experience with folks in the spiritual community, conscious community, whether that's online or in your, you know, your local area, who do take a sort of stance of like, you're being too negative, or you're being, you know, this is like too heavy for me. Like, let me give you an example. Just a week ago, while we were wrapping up our Mexico activation tour, we're traveling around, Miriam's doing guided meditations, talking about mental, physical and spiritual health. But I also do a presentation that does go deep into some of the things that you're talking about, the concentration camps, the COVID vaccines, all this stuff, right? And I also, you know, of course, bring it back to here's what we can do about it. But before I even had a chance to get there, there was a woman that I guess had a real, she got triggered. Let's just, you know, for lack of a better term, she got triggered, and she stood up and she just kind of started shouting at me during my presentation and was saying like, you're so negative. You're just about fear. You know, this is all about fear. And she's like, you're not telling people that there are good people that are going to stop this. And, you know, I knew where this was going. So I said, you mean the white hats? And she said, sure enough. She's like, yes, the white hats, you know, and this, for those who might not be familiar with that terminology, this has been around since the internet on the 90s, but this belief that there are these good guys within government or within the intelligence community, this is of course popularized by QAnon and things like that, but that there are some good people out there taking care of things, and so we don't have to do anything, right? I don't really need to do any work. I don't need to learn how to grow my own food. I don't need to get on Be Sovereign or support Quartal or any of these new ideas, because the white hat's got things under control, right? So I just want, you know, curious, like, have you run into that as well, where it's not even that some people are sticking their head in the sand and they're like, don't tell me about the bad things. It's like they're falling for the idea that somebody else is going to fix it. So they don't need to do that internal work. They don't need to learn these things. They don't need to read the articles or figure out if they want to grow their own food, because somebody else has got it under control. Is this something you're coming across as well?
Absolutely. And it's so interesting to me that this woman, for example, this archetype is like foaming at the mouth about how negative you are while being extremely meta negative, right? You know, that's sort of the irony there. And so ultimately, there, you know, but we can learn from everyone and everything, you know, and what she's pointing out is valid in a certain way, which is that sometimes some of the things that I think you and I know and have stumbled upon is so dark that it's traumatizing just to know about them. And so if you're a decent person, which the majority of people are, they are not necessarily capable at the stage that they're at of holding both the unconscionable horrors of what has happened in history, what will continue to happen in the future if this timeline isn't interrupted, and what's happening even in the present, and still maintain their sanity. And I think that's the real challenge, Derek, is that you can't necessarily just disseminate the facts widely without qualification and knowing who you're audiences. So as far as the, you know, this notion of there being white hats, and obviously the QAnon psyop was just so disturbing. You know, that's why I've put a lot of energy into building structures. The nonprofit, for example, is transpartisan. Like, I do believe that what we've seen in the window of the pandemic is a new center of political gravity, where it's really just a question, do you believe that your body is yours, right? Like that you have a choice about what happens to it or not. You know, that's a very simple thing. And the whole Republican, Democrat, Coke, Pepsi, you know, sort of false paradigm of choice is just completely, it's just falling apart. So I think that a lot of people have woken up in a way that I couldn't have imagined pre-COVID. Maybe 1% of the world's population would have said, you know, I'm anti-vaccine. I don't even use that phrase to describe myself, okay? I would say probably 25% of the world may at this point at least be anti-COVID gene therapy vaccine. And so they just kind of did humanity a great favor. So yeah, but I hear you. It's not easy to go out there and try to hold both this beautiful image and then also help to bring transparency to the insane darkness. Like, for example, like anyone can just go look at the Falun Gong and the organ harvesting that's been happening there. and then start to understand what the red markets and just the way that the global organ acquisition system works to anonymize the source, that we already have a global medical complex that just feeds on flesh, right? Or Planned Parenthood and the dark side of Margaret Sattler and all the things that really with the eugenics movement that are just woven into all of these organizations that, you know, we pretend as if they're here to help humanity. They're good. You know, it's just like, it's challenging. It's really challenging.
Yeah, I try to hold empathy for sure for these folks. Like even after the woman, you know, stormed out of the presentation, it was interesting. For one, some of her friends were like, "Hey, she's a good woman. You know, she just got upset." But they were like, "Well, she got here late. She didn't get to do the meditation first." And that's kind of, it sets the stage for my presentation, right? So we start with the meditation to kind of get everybody centered, and then we go like, "All right, we're going to go deep, but we're also going to focus on solutions." And so maybe that was a role she, you know, part of the reason she felt that way. But I feel like, I guess my ultimate message to anybody who is looking for a savior in a presidential candidate or a QAnon or white hats or whatever the situation is, that I think that it's not that things are hopeless, you know, because I feel like that's the conversations I had. I would talk to some QAnon folks and I would say, "Hey, but look, this thing doesn't add up, man. They're claiming this thing and it doesn't really say this." And I could get some of them to be like, "You know what? Maybe you're right. Maybe this isn't real." But then they would say things like, "But if it's not, we're totally screwed. So it's got to be real." So it was sort of this like almost kind of like, okay, maybe you're right. Maybe I'm being led astray. But if that's true, then that means I have to actually do something. That means somebody's not coming to save the day for me, right? And that can be really scary for a lot of people. I think that's what goes back to the radical personal responsibility we're talking about. And that is so key. If we're going to have a free world of any kind, people need to be willing to take responsibility for their own actions, for their own lives, their own mistakes. Doesn't mean that there aren't other people trying to manipulate our lives and kind of affect our decision-making process. But we have to get to a place of honesty, of integrity, and being willing to say, "Look, you know what? I need to take care of myself and my family. I need to acknowledge, you know, what Sayer's saying here. There's some things on the horizon. There's some plans coming up that these people believe they're going to bring into fruition. They may or may not happen. Maybe they'll fail. Maybe, you know, more and more people will wake up." Because I agree with you. I've never seen more people questioning things than I have in the last, you know, this at this moment than I have in the last 12 years. Maybe those things can be prevented, but at the same time, if they are prevented, or if they're even just, if we avoid them and we're able to live free on our own, which is what I'm fighting for, it's only going to happen because more of us do take responsibility for our own lives, not because we choose to, like, you know, cover our ears and close our eyes, you know. And so for me, it's also part of, in a spiritual way, and maybe you can speak to this if you feel the same, I believe this is why I'm on this planet. Like, I know that this is why I'm here, is to be alive at this time in history and to affect, in whatever way I can, my family, my friends, my circle of influence, and to try to manifest a better world, not just with my mind and with prayer and meditation, but through physical action and creation. And so while things are unnerving and scary and you know, can be difficult to just take on, I try to stay tuned into that inner child, because for me, the inner child is the connection to your joy and your creativity. It's also the connection to your healing. And those two things are vital at this moment. I try to stay connected to that, and I keep being shown by my creator that this is why I'm here on this planet, to be here, to play a role. And I think all of us are. It's just that some of us might be willing to step up to the plate and say, "Okay, I'm going to play that role," while others are sort of, I don't know, they're waiting for something. But what do you think about that? Do you find yourself feeling like this is, you know, an important time in history that you know, are maybe fated or destined to be here for a reason?
I mean, I feel like this is like, best life ever is sort of my motto at this point. Yeah, I mean, I'm just in awe at this moment and the shifts that are occurring, as well as even with my research that goes back from when I was 17, like I was really into this topic of precession of the equinoxes and the progression of consciousness through these very cyclical stages. And I really am starting to better understand, like, contextually, it's almost like a new Copernican revolution that we are in a system that is starting to see a turning of the ages. I mean, people have talked about this for quite some time. So on some level, passing through, you know, the pandemic, if you will, was a necessary transitional stage. And, you know, we're in the birth canal still, but I'm super excited about being alive right now. I mean, there's, again, this is an incredible time to be able to, you know, see the earth transform into something incredibly beautiful. So I'm actually really excited about being here. And I agree. I feel like this is a great gift that I've given myself to return at this moment. And, you know, I have children, so I want this world to be as beautiful as is possible. And it is a regenerative place. So we just have to kind of get out of the way and let the magic happen. So, yeah, I mean, not to be too Pollyannish, we're up against some pretty dark forces, if you will, but they're here to wake us up. So in ways, they're just as part of the light as you know, the light. So, you know, and that's part of the lesson, right? To not fight. I mean, it's like if you're walking in the forest and there's a snake that you know lives there and you get bit, you knew the snake was there. You know, snakes do bite, not arbitrarily, obviously. But if you're not careful and you step on it, it might bite you, right? So you don't blame the snake. You have to kind of level up, be more conscious. So these forces are out there and some of them are dangerous. You just have to be aware, you know, or if you really learn to swim deeply, you have to learn to swim alongside sharks. And so it's the same thing, you know, like we just have to figure out how to navigate this transition safely, but it can be done. And the more people like you and the people listening that are doing it with us, I mean, it just feels wonderful. We're all kind of doing this together, and I feel we're going to be pretty victorious.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you know, just to, as we start to get to a close here, I just wanted to add to what you're saying there. I mean, since the beginning of my awakening journey, I've tried to hold a sense of compassion and empathy in my activism. For example, I go out to the street, maybe I try to hand somebody a flyer and they call me crazy, right? Instead of feeding into that and, you know, getting in an argument on the street, I just try to remember, you know what, they might not understand what I'm talking about, but at the end of the day, I'm trying to help them as well. So let me not feed into that, right? And carrying that empathy on even further to the, you know, the predator class, the powers that wish they were, all the way up to somebody like a Henry Kissinger and a Klaus Schwab, right? Like, as difficult as it might be for some people to imagine, they are probably grandparents to some little kid who thinks the world of them, who thinks they are the, you know, the best grandpa ever and amazing and this and that, right? A certain perception that for many of us is difficult to even fathom because of the way that we kind of turn these people into caricatures in some cases, right? But at the end of the day, it is the reality. And I also agree with you that, like, this is, you know, we wouldn't be here without them, right? If there weren't people doing all these things, then I wouldn't have found these documentaries and these books that helped wake me up to all this information so that I could start spreading more information, so that I could start getting into journalism, so that I could start creating documentaries and writing books and giving talks to try to focus on the solutions, right? So if it wasn't for that darkness, then I'm not sure that we would be in the light as well. And so ultimately, I do think, just like you said, the snake, you know, it bites if it's in its nature. The sharks will come bite if it's in their nature, right? And you don't sit there and get angry at them for doing what's in their nature. And for whatever reason, that may be beyond our current human understanding, this is the role that we were brought into play. And the people on the, you know, the opposing side are playing the role that maybe they're destined to as well. And maybe that doesn't make complete sense to us, but I do know that, like, there is that yin and yang balance taking place for certain.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I mean, I think what I've come to understand about the Klaus Schwabs and the Bill Gates of the world is that it's what Frank Zappa said about politics being the entertainment division of the industrial military establishment. Is like, it's a game. Like, they want you to get upset. It's a humiliation ritual that these puppets are being bandied about as somehow being in power or have some control over you. But it's a joke. I mean, the true rulers, you know, rule in secrecy, and they're more the trillionaire class anyway, you know? So don't get caught in the dialectic. They want you to get upset. They want you to think that there are the predator class that's out to get you. But like you pointed out, these are still humans, okay? If they're human, the redemption is possible. And hopefully we can hold space for these individuals, whoever they may be, to come to awareness around their true nature, and which is divine, you know? I do think that there may be some elements that you can't even describe as human, and that includes the whole AI system that's being architected around us. But you know, when it comes to humans, we got to be forgiving and kind and compassionate. And, you know, we're all in this together. So, yeah, I'm pretty hopeful. I think that actually, if you really look at what happened, the plandemic was a desperate death row attempt, right? To try to lock things back, you know, in the three dimensions, but it was a reflection of how much control they lost. I mean, look at decentralization with the internet and with some of these projects like Cordal, Bitcoin, obviously. I mean, they're just losing control of this ancient, many millennial power structure. So in ways, what we saw, the most egregious of all, you know, lies and power grabs and transfer of wealth is a reflection of the fact that we're victorious. The truth is coming out. People are waking up. All these amazing systems and solutions are being rolled out. You're pioneering this, actually. So, you know, people that know my work, know you should join the Conscious Resistance Movement, take advantage of the Freedom Cell Network that you've created, and continue to connect with your communities laterally. Like, this is the mycelium. That's not going to go away if they roll out a new pandemic with some kind of, like, you know, cyber attack, false flag, or whatever they're going to do, the rolling climate change, power outages, you know. We got to continue to create these structures and systems and you know, learn to connect and familiarize ourselves with our neighbors and be kind. And that's what's going to get us through this transition no matter what.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with what you said there. And I'll just add to that for those who are listening from your audience who might not be familiar. The website for the Freedom Cell Network is freedomcells.org. And you know, the importance of connecting with people locally, we've kind of hit on that a few times today. I'll say this, that before COVID, we had about 1,000 people in the Freedom Cell Network promoting solutions, organizing locally, getting connected with each other. And then when COVID happened, we now have 32,000 people from around the world. It, you know, it just exploded exponentially. Australia, India, the UK, Germany, across Europe, 15 Freedom Cells in Mexico now that I've just connected with as we've been traveling. You know, the solutions are out there. And I do believe that with every new step they take, more people will wake up, right? Things will get progressively darker and scarier and more intimidating. And that's something we need to learn to navigate and be prepared for in whatever ways we can, mentally, physically, spiritually. But at the same time, take some solace in knowing that the harder they push, like you said, these are the death throes of this dying system. The harder they push, the more people will also continue to question. There are people right now who might have questions about COVID and for one reason or another are not ready to go all the way. They're like, nah, I'm going to lose friends if I start asking these things, or I might lose my job, or whatever the case may be. But then maybe in this next pandemic, or like you said, the rolling climate propaganda or the cyber pandemic or whatever they have in their cards, there are going to be more people who have the common sense still within them to say, you know what, this isn't fitting. Let me go call that crazy friend I had and say, hey, sire, tell me all about this stuff you've been telling me for years, right? I do think there are going to be more opportunities for us to connect with our brothers and sisters, family members who at the moment can't see what we can see and maybe even despise us for talking about these things. So I think that this is really just the beginning. It's been a wild 2 years for sure. It's also been the best 2 years of my life, personally. It's been just such an amazing, rapid change to go from having some dreams and visions that were off in the future and deciding with COVID, you know what? Okay, the game is accelerating. Instead of waiting, I'm going to just put everything I got into manifesting and creating the vision for my life that I want, right? So, you know, that's the only advice I would offer to either of our listeners is if you're still sitting on the sidelines, if you're still living in fear or just paralyzed by the what ifs, they might do this, it could be this thing, supply chain, use these situations as an opportunity to start living in line with your values, align your thoughts, words, and actions. You know, I've been really, kind of hammering home lately that it's not enough to be awake anymore, if it ever was, that we need to be activated. We need to be action-oriented, whatever that means to you, whether that's doing the internal work, the healing work, or focusing on learning about growing food, permaculture, getting more connected to people in your community, you know, hosting events, doing things like the campaigns to try to push back on legislation and things like that. Whatever it is that you're going to choose to, you know, fight in, however you choose to express yourself and build this new world, this is the time for all of us to bring our tools to the table and to do what we can. So that's pretty much all I got for today, brother, but I'd love to hear any closing thoughts you have to share with the audience.
Yeah, I mean, what you're saying resonates deeply because I feel like the frequency of like wakefulness of consciousness is increasing so much that if your body and you know, your emotional body, your physical body, you know, your trauma body, it's not, if you haven't worked through some of these things, it's going to make it even more difficult. It's going to be even more confusing. It's going to be straight up psychiatric for some people. So it's almost like as we continue to see things so blatantly unfold before our eyes. I mean, they're not even trying to hide the absurdity. It's part of the agenda, is you want to fragment, confuse, overwhelm, and then people are just dying to be told what to do. That's their strategy. So you have to, in ways, really double down on your self-care, your bodily practice, intentional movement, your community, you know, disintermediate yourself from these dark systems that are here to harvest our energy and, you know, eventually come, you know, make it difficult not to require, you know, things like universal basic income, you know, when they've imploded the economy, it's all about building that resilience and those communities. Now, then you will get a great gift, which is you prepared and you will see, you know, the emergence of this incredible world. You know, I mean, I've been a student now of these ancient civilizations for some time. You know, I was first introduced to the work of Edgar Cayce around Atlantis when I was in my early 20s. And now I'm starting to really dive back deeper into that information. And I'm so convinced that we have seen very high technology cultures in the past, right, in prehistory, that now some of that's coming back. And so, and I think it's cyclical. So I think what's happening now is actually related to the precession of the equinoxes and all this stuff that will eventually, I think, become pretty normalized. Like people will start to better understand the context for human origins in a different way. So I'm excited, man. I'm just beginning. You know, we didn't talk about like free energy technologies and all this stuff, but, you know, that's where I'm focusing my energy personally. And in the future, I'll be doing more work around exposing those extremely exciting technologies and solutions like yourself, because that's, I think, what we need more than ever is inspiration and beauty. And you know, we're getting close. We're getting close. So thanks for the opportunity, Derek, to, you know, share a little bit about my work. And I would love the people that, you know, follow me to start connecting with your community and your work. And it's just great cross-pollination.
Yeah, absolutely, brother. Thank you so much for sharing all that. And definitely look forward to more conversations, because I agree with you on as far as past civilizations and technologically advanced. And we just had an experience just a couple weeks ago getting to go visit some of the ruins here in Mexico that are deep in the jungle, almost untouched, and just so much history, so much to learn, so much to ask and understand. And I agree with you, guys. This is just the beginning. This is the beginning of wherever we want to take it, right? And ultimately, it's still in our hands. They have their mechanisms of control and of trying to influence the populace, but we also ultimately are in control of our own minds. So stay free in your heart and your mind, and hopefully this conversation has given you some things to think about. So until next time, guys, as always, remember, you are powerful, you are beautiful, and you are free. Peace. Thank you for listening to the Activation Podcast, brought to you by the Conscious Resistance Network. You can find the archives of our show on Spotify, Pinecast, and at theconsciousresistance.com. Thanks for listening.